Make sure you're in fellowship as we resume here in regards to Genesis 43, 1 through 5, as we are analyzing the verses. The author reminds us, as we've seen, that the famine is severe in the land. This is to bring notice to the believer that God is in control of circumstances and situations of life. He's in control of the weather. And God is free to utilize these things as he may deem necessary. To, if you will, force the hand of people in making decisions one way or another in regards to their lives. The situation as it exists with the family under Jacob and his sons is they are procrastinating, which basically is hinted at the very beginning of the situation with the sons standing around staring at each other. The brothers know that they can't return to Egypt without Benjamin. And they know that Jacob is adamant in regards to not sending him. So a conflict exists between father and sons. But the situation in regards to their living grace has become dire once again. And they have exhausted their food supplies that they originally purchased on the first trip. And now, unless someone returns and purchases more grain, it would mean ultimate death, obviously, for those who are involved. So here we see an example of God using the circumstance at hand to get Jacob and sons to start talking. First and foremost, you can't resolve a conflict if you're not willing to communicate. I mean, what are you going to sit there and do? Wish it away. You can wish in one hand and you know what in the other hand, see which happens first. Now, it takes communication. If you don't have good communication between people, then that's where a lot of things will end up festering. Things go left unresolved. Conflicts are not taken care of, and the situation does not better itself at the very minimum. So God uses here something that otherwise is a real test, a real pressure, a life and death situation as it is, to protect Jacob and his family, these believers who are all destined, if you will, to be fulfillment of God's prophecy with respect to Abraham to continue on and move in that direction. So point 16 is where we left off. Verse 2 tells us that the family had totally exhausted their previous grain purchase before Jacob here takes action or took action. Quote, so it came about when they finished eating the grain which they had brought from Egypt, then their father said to them, the vocabulary words there, the Hebrew, wow, hayah, kaf, asher, kala, lamed, akal, hashever, asher, bomin, Egypt, wow, amar, elab. 17, now the sensible, prudent approach would have been to have made the trip, the long trip, to purchase more grain before the supply had been exhausted, to plan ahead a little bit. Let's see. Why wait till the last minute when you could easily go ahead and gone down and got more grain? But we have a stalemate in the family. And the stubbornness kind of ekes through with regards to their personalities towards one another in this respect. And the fact that they don't, point 18, this reflects upon the ongoing procrastination to deal with the familial conflict at hand between Jacob and his sons. 19, they were all faced with the apparent starvation of their families. Until hunger forced them to face up to the facts, they simply ignore them, hoping for an alternative. Maybe something else will occur, maybe in their thinking, that will, to the son, change his mind. As Judah will bring out, part of the force in regards to the brother's procrastination and dealing with it is they don't go back with Jacob. They're dead, Benjamin, they're dead meat anyway. Etc. But the situation, again, forces them that, well, we've got children, we've got family, we've got wives. What about them? You can only be so self-centered eventually if you want to protect your livelihood and your assets in life. You have to think of others, generally speaking, and when it comes to family especially. So 20, the STA, that acronym stands for Sinful Trend of Adam, also known as the old sin nature, simply referred to as the flesh in Scripture, or sometimes technically used under the term sin. It recognizes that we're born in this world with a sin nature, thanks to our corporate parents, Adam and Eve, and their failure in the garden. But the STA, the Sinful Trend of Adam, operates under the sin aspects of life. And here the sin is fear. So the STA, running under fear, is such that believers often seek to avoid conflict situations that are or could be detrimental to their livelihood. Again, I'm fairly convinced myself, at least, that fear is probably one of the, if not the most dominant STA trend among mankind. Some form of fear. Obviously, you got to recognize in the Bible certain actions are regarded as sinful in certain circumstances, situations, and non-sinful or righteous in other circumstances. In other words, the Bible tells us, commands us to fear God. That's a righteous fear. God is our creator. We should obviously dedicate our allegiance and loyalty to Him in this regard, respectful in the mind of our thinking, knowing that He condemns both soul and body to hell as necessary. But we're also told on the other end of the coin not to fear. Anxiety, worry, do not be anxious what tomorrow may bring. You know, things of this nature, as so in Jesus' teaching. Most fear that is exercised by mankind is sin fear. We're not even supposed to be afraid of sudden dangers, to be afraid of men and what they can do to our lives. We are called to engage in life in its perspective, under doctrine, to engage in a great leap of faith. While we learn from the Bible, obviously we can look at the physical world, we can see the evidence that proves it and validates it in many cases, but still the reality of these things and promises that we have set before, the condition of mankind and its ultimate destiny, being a believer, an unbeliever, being in hell or in heaven, all this, we only know this by the Bible. And we live our life by faith. And that faith can obviously be shaken if you don't maintain your own loyalty and drive under your population to faith rest. Faith rest is your antidote in regards to fear, rather than to be fearful in regards to things. Fear is an emotion, is a responder, or it manifests itself as an emotion often in this regards. We're not to live our life by fear. And people are afraid in all different areas. It's not just life. They can be afraid of what people may think about them. Things of this nature. Well, you know, if I give the witness of doctrine, maybe everybody's going to look at me in a different way or whatever. And provides avoidance often in regards to resolving conflict situations. They're scared of what the repercussions might be if they have to deal with it. And here, obviously, their fear of avoiding this conflict between them has certain consequences that can mean life or death for their families. Not that all conflicts are that intense, but it could be. 21, the families avoiding their problems did not solve their problems. Yes, there are some problems that tend to go by the wayside and simply disappear in life. But there are other problems that must be resolved. And their failure to communicate, as a warden would say, with one another does not resolve their problem. You have marital problems, problems with children. Parents should sit down and talk to their children. And in a doctrinal way, as a parent, you should be able to bring out doctrine at all times in regards to why you instruct your children the way you do. If you want them to grow up and have a frame of reference for doctrine for their own lives, at least. Married couples, people get stubborn, obstinate towards one another in regards to decisions of life. They'll take doctrine and discuss it. Maybe you can, doctrine is your mainstay, it's your guideline. If both of you are in agreement in regards to doctrine is that which is going to govern your life, then you have recourse and a prescription in regards to resolving the conflict. When you bring doctrine out, well, this is what doctrine says, all right, well, who's ever wrong? Okay, I see that, make the adjustment, et cetera, et cetera. Where both are wrong. Often you'll see errors on both sides, but anyway. So run away from it. That doesn't solve anything. 22, while Jacob was adamant in his refusal to Reuben's offering, he recognizes the gravity of their situation and is compelled to tell his sons, go back, buy us a little food. Shub, Shavar, Lamed, Naoth, Okel. Return, purchase. A little food. So, Jacob once again steps up to the plate, but how he deals with it is not going to resolve anything in and of itself. There's going to have to be further consideration, further dialogue to finally bring everybody around on the same page. When everybody's on the same page, it's amazing how much smoother life is. You're out of step in the marching order. You know, the military expected your instructor to be jumping down people's throats, get in step, get the cadence. So it is in doctrine. People out of step with doctrine, all it does is create unrest, often dissension, and things of this nature. But when everybody's on the same page, like-minded in doctrine, it provides for an enjoyable time, usually, even in times of testing and things of that nature. So he just simply says, go back, buy us a little food. 23, he tests the waters to see if they too have become sufficiently desperate enough to try and return without Benjamin. They've exhausted the grain supply. Now, how desperate are they? See? So his approach here kind of tests the waters. Maybe maybe their whole deal about Benjamin was not that important. Maybe they're suffering enough, and they see the consequences. They don't go get food, that everybody's going to starve. He obviously had become leery as to the accuracy of the son's previous account of events that we saw back in verses 36 and 38 of chapter 42. Maybe the need for Benjamin's return was fabricated. He obviously was very suspicious. He doesn't really believe him. He thinks there's something else under the table that they're not being open and honest about. And he's right. They sure didn't tell him the truth of everything that happened in that regard. They sure didn't tell him that, well, this cruel, mean ruler, you know what he said to us? He says, he fears God, our God, in preservation of life. Sure not going to tell their dad that. But either way, Jacob was extremely suspicious. He doesn't trust his sons. And obviously we see where that's a correct assumption to a certain degree. 25, his comment as to the phrase, a little food in quotes here, now exposes his ignorance to just how severe this famine is and as to the longevity it will maintain. Buy us a little food. Well, they just went down and made a long trip to get grain. Now just go back and get us a little food. So at least we can get by. You know, maybe it's a part of trying to convince them, well, maybe just don't go back and try to buy everything again that we need. Just see if you can get a little bit. You know, that type of approach. But it truly shows their side of the coin of ignorance. The real situation at hand in regards to this famine. All this because of their dismissal of Joseph's dreams doctrinally and the consequences of their brothers being negative, more or less, otherwise in that respect, as well as Jacob. So 26, we are now probably into the second year of the famine, and there are at least five more to go. So 27, ignorance here is the consequence for dismissing Joseph's dreams, which is tantamount to they rejected the doctrine. Even Jacob poo-hooed it. Really? Your father and your mother's going to bow down to you? One can only imagine a different scenario if all had been positive to Joseph's dreams and the family still in contact with one another. If they still had, Joseph still had their ear, if you will, and they're still, he hadn't been kidnapped, hadn't been separated from him for 21 years. I mean, God could have brought this whole thing around in a different way. He could have made Joseph busier by any number of ways if he so chose to do so, if that's what it's going to take to get them over there, etc. But as it is, we see life played out under these current circumstances, situations. But if they had adhered to the dreams, well, first and foremost, Jacob would have known that Joseph wasn't dead because they hadn't bowed down to him. And, didn't he say something about sheaves of grain? So 29, obviously all would be privy to Joseph's interpretation of Pharaoh's dreams. If nothing else, being parcel to the ordination ceremony of Joseph being promoted to vizier because they're all still family. See? And been together. 30, Jacob's suspicion as to their story is immediately recognized by the natural leader now of the brothers Judah. So that's verse 3. Out of the brothers, apart from Joseph, Judah shows the most spiritually on the ball, though his is lacks real luster in its own right. And we've been through all that in evaluating here the brothers' personalities, etc. We'll get a chance to do it again when we get to chapter 50, 49, 50. Judah spoke to him, however, saying, so Judah is the natural leader of the group. He's the one from which the tribe would come Messiah, from the tribe of Judah, the king of Israel. But even Judah didn't get the rights of primogeniture, the rights of the firstborn. That went to Joseph. 33, now his tact, Judah's tact, to convince Jacob otherwise, is here to address the issue head on, saying, the man solemnly warned us, you shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. Lamed Amar Od Bet Haish Lamed Amar Lo Ra Paneh Leti Ak Et. So he sees and recognizes the conflict. The father has told him to go buy food. So he steps up to the plate and he takes charge of the situation. And he simply addresses the situation head on. Here's the problem. Here's the problem about your command and unwillingness to send Benjamin. So 32, now he simply addresses Joseph here in the conversation as, quote, the man. Verses 3 and 5. That's the way he uses it. The man, the lord of the land, was how they addressed the ruler, Joseph, whom they still don't know, that's Joseph, earlier in their version of the story, to put a different light in regards to his person. Here, Judah just simply refers to him as the man. And he avoids, in so doing, avoiding any tone of embellishment to his claims. Sometimes you can, you do become suspicious when kids start to tell you a story, and rather than just sticking to the point, stick to this, they start building it up. You know, add a little bit here, add a little bit there, parts of things, and so it is in conversations. To try to embellish the situation, to put a better spin on it, to try to convince people of things. 33, he emphasizes now that indeed the ruler, quote, solemnly warned us, end quote, to capture the seriousness behind his words. Our verb to warn is the hifil form. Is repeated twice as an infinitive and then as the hifil perfect form of the verb. To warn, warning. He warned, or to warn, he warned, is a literal Hebrew. And that captures the seriousness behind his words, that it has dual ramifications and consequences. He won't believe and they'll get killed. Basically. He won't believe their honesty and they'll get killed. And here translated, solemnly warned us with all seriousness. 34, Genesis 44, 23 now, records that the words, quote, "You shall not see my face," lo ra'ah panah in the Hebrew, was part of Joseph's dialogue not mentioned in the original narrative in chapter 42. Here you have to look forward, and we are informed that there were additional words that were spoken between Joseph and the brothers, not recorded in the original account in Genesis 41 and 42. Genesis 44:23, Judah now approaching Joseph in this conversation. He says, "You said to your servants, however, unless your youngest brother comes down with you, you will not see my face again." So 35, Judah here uses the warning to establish his platform of argument before Jacob. And this doesn't change anything that we've done previous in our analysis of their version of events and things of this nature. So he uses the warning, "You will not see my face," that is, you will not gain audience with my person. If they don't come back with a brother, execution is supposedly what's going to occur. So why do they need to see his face? They've already been judged by him. See. 36, that is, apart from taking Benjamin with them, there would be absolutely no opportunity to buy grain, indicating the trip wasted. If they cannot gain audience, then they can't buy grain, because he is the dispenser of all the food purchases of the economy of Egypt in that vein. So 37, now it is the omission of Joseph's warnings that they would be killed if they failed to do as he commanded, that Judah here most obviously sought to avoid with Jacob. Again, it's accurate that he uses the words to his advantage and refrains from still saying everything. No matter omissions of dialogue, as they may occur here, whatever his intentions from Judah, his claim sets up his stipulations then as to meeting Jacob's request to return. In other words, it's not going to do us any good to go if we can't buy grain. So, here is your conditions in regards to us leaving and buying grain. 39, he first advances the positive aspect of it in verse 4. If, that's conditional, you send our brother with us, we will go down and buy food. Im yesh shalak ak et yarad va shabar lamed okel. 40, Judah's oratory skill here is subtly seen in the phrase, quote, "and by you," that's in the singular, "you, Jacob, food," end quote. Again, the natural traits of a good leader is one that does have certain oratory skills in order to convince as necessary in regards to life. So here we see how he approaches his dad. We're not buy everybody food. We'll buy you food. 41, he presents his offer as to doing Jacob a favor, even though we all need food. It is inference that Jacob's life depends upon agreeing to his terms, and that the sons in return only want the best for him. In other words, you need to do this, Dad. We love you, and we don't want to see you die. It's kind of the idea behind it. So 43, however, if Jacob should refuse, then he is left with the alternative in verse 5. Quote, but if you do not send him, we will not go down. Wow, him, ayan, shalak, lo, negative, yarad, go down or descend. Descending from a higher elevation to a lower elevation. That's the Hebrew way of looking at directions people are going. Where you look at going down is like heading south. In this case, going down is heading more or less northwest from Canaan down to Egypt. Judah here places the burden of choice on Jacob's shoulders. The repeated claim ending his offer, quote, for the man said to us, you will not see my face unless your brother is with you, expresses here how adamant Judah is as to the absurdity of returning without their brother. It's absurd to even try. He in effect is saying that to go without Benjamin is not only a wasted trip, but so fruitless that he and his brothers are prepared to go ahead and just die of starvation without the aggravation of a long trip. If we're going to die, and obviously you got to keep in mind all the different aspects of thoughts that are going on here. They don't go back. They think that they're going to die. They think that the ruler is going to kill them. See, so that's where Judah's coming from in his thinking. But now he presents it in such a way to his father to just put it on a more benign level that is basically fruitless. We can't go back without Benjamin anyway, and we might as well just sit here and starve rather than get out there and be put up with all the hassle of this trip again and starve otherwise. We'll still starve, see. So 47, Judah's approach to Jacob here, simplified if you will, was to transfer his, that's Jacob's, irrational thoughts of obstinate refusal to send Benjamin now to helplessness as to the situation. This backed him in a corner, more or less. We can't gain audience if we don't take Benjamin back, Dad. So what are you going to do? We're not leaving. We're not going to make a wasted trip. So now Jacob has to come to a determination, or is designed to bring him to a determination, just to see how fruitless it is for him to try to force him to do something otherwise. And obviously, at his age, at this point in time, he's too old to make the trip on his own. 48 is a, quote, shock, in quote, effect, to recognize an either-or reality. It's either this or that. 49, this will open the doors for a more rational conversation to follow. All right, that brings us to verses 6 and 7. Titled these verses, Jacob Seeks to Resolve His Suspicion. So the ultimatum does cause you to start thinking more rational. What it does in that vein is he kind of clears out his mind, and there's just one thing left in his thinking that he must address and deal with for him to come to a certain determination and conclusion of choice here. So, while Judah gave him the ultimatum, there still is a suspicion that lingers in regards to Judah, which we've already introduced, and that is that his sons are in some way out to try to do something bad to him. So, verse 6, looking at the Hebrew here, then Israel said, why did you treat me so badly by telling the man whether you still had another supplied in the English brother? You have the wow consecutive, followed with your cow, perfect third masculine singular verb, amar, A-M-A-R. And he said, proper noun, Israel. Just transliterated. Then your why is your interrogative particle, lama, L-A-M-M-A-H. Why or for what reason? To treat badly. That is your hifil, which is causative in the Hebrew, perfect. Second masculine plural verb, ra'ah, R-A-A. Why did you cause evil or treat badly to me? Literally, preposition lama, the first common singular suffix. By telling the man. You have the preposition lamed with the hifil infinitive verb construct nagad, N-A-G-A-D, to make known, hence by telling, by causing to make known. Again, hifil is causative. The man, to the man, preposition lamed, definite article, or noun for man in the Hebrew, common masculine singular, absolute is ish. Woman is ish shasha. You put the feminine ending on ish, you have woman. Whether is your another interrogative particle. This one is ha, H-A, whether. Still or yet is the adverb od, O-D. Another supplied for you all, literally awkward in the English, the Hebrew, for you all, lama is the second masculine plural suffix, the preposition, then our noun for brother, common masculine singular absolute, ach, A-C-H. But they said, so the band of brothers corporately step in to speak now in between Judah's speaking to their father. But they said, the man questioned particularly about us and our relatives, saying, is your father still alive? Have you another brother? You have the wow consecutive. Again, our verb to say, amar, A-M-A-R. Count perfect third masculine plural. To question or inquire, is your count infinitive absolute? Sha'al, S-H-A-L. Inquiring, questioning. And then it's repeated in the perfect form. Cal, third masculine singular, sha'al, sha'al. Inquiring, he inquired. Or questioning, he questioned. Again, the Hebrewism that is used here. The man doing the questioning, definite article, followed with ish, common masculine singular noun, ish. About us is the preposition lamed with the first common plural suffix. And our relatives is wow conjunction, preposition lamed. And then our noun for relatives, common feminine singular, construct the first common plural suffix, moledeth, moledeth, M-O-L-E-D-E-T-H, relatives, family. Saying is the preposition lamed with the verb amar, here in the infinity form, cal, construct, A-M-A-R. Again, whether is your interrogative particle ha, H-A. Still is adverb O, repeated. O-D, still or yet. And then our noun for father is a common masculine singular struct, second masculine plural suffix of, A-B. Whether yet your father is alive. Is alive is the adjective, masculine singular absolute, K, C-H-A-Y. And then whether repeated, particle ha, H-A, interrogative. Then you have the adverb yesh, Y-E-S-H, literally there exists, understood in the English, another, if you will, in that supplied form. For you all, literally, have you, preposition lamed, second masculine plural suffix, a brother, ach, common masculine singular absolute, A-C-H. So we answered his questions. Vowel consecutive, to answer, make known. Hifil, again, causative, first common plural, the imperfect, nagad, N-A-G-A-D. Hence answered here in context. To him, preposition, lamed, third masculine singular suffix. His questions is, you have the preposition all, A-L, followed with the common masculine singular construct noun or word for mouth, P-E-H, peh, from his mouth or upon his mouth. These words, literally, definite article, common masculine plural absolute, devar, the words, things, the matter at hand, D-A-B-A-R, these is your adjective, both plural, with the definite article, ella, E-L-L-E-H. From his mouth, the matter of these words, it'd be kind of how you would put it in the English from the Hebrew. Could we know? You have the interrogative particle ha, repeated. Here translated could, H-A. Knowing is your cal infinitive absolute, yada, Y-A-D-A. Followed with the cal imperfect, first common plural, yada. Knowing we would know, knowing we could know, yada, Y-A-D-A. That he would say, conjunction key, K-I-Y. Say, again, is amar, cal imperfect, third masculine singular. Bring your brother down is the hifil, imperative, masculine plural, yarad. Given obviously in the form of command to them by the ruler, Y-A-R-A-D. You will cause to bring down your brother, sign a direct object with their noun, brother, ach, A-C-H. Call masculine singular struct, second masculine plural suffix. All right, well. This gives us a clean starting point for Tuesday. So we'll just wind it up here. We're almost done with class anyway. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, continue to lighten us to these things. In Jesus' name, amen.